Welcome to season two of Beyond Beauty. I'm so excited. Where I talk with visionary artists who share their journeys, influences, and creative processes. My name is Jacqueline Cofield, and I research and study artistic praxis. This season brings together a wonderful and diverse lineup of voices, artists whose roots and cultural backgrounds shape the art they bring to the world. Each conversation reveals not just the artwork, but the personal and collective narratives that inspire it. Join me as we explore the intricate blend of heritage, creativity, and purpose that defines these remarkable women artists. Hello, everyone. This is Jacqueline, your host of the Beyond Beauty podcast. Today, we have an illuminating episode featuring Rajashree Goody. In this episode, Rajashree shares her journey from growing up in an environment filled with educators and scholars to becoming a critical voice in the art world. Through her art, she challenges systemic oppression and provides valuable insights into the lived experiences of Dalit people. Stay with us as we explore the profound and multifaceted world of Rajashree Goody. Rajashree, I'm so thrilled to have you today with me on the Beyond Beauty podcast. Thank you for accepting. Thank you for saying yes. I know you're in Paris. I'm super, super jealous. I want to be transported there. I first discovered your work through the National Museum for Women in the Arts, one of my favorite museums, and I've been captivated ever since. Having myself visited India three times, and having explored six cities, I'm fascinated by your exploration of caste-based discrimination and social injustice and the lived experiences, particularly of Dalit communities. Your art not only challenges systemic oppression and caste hierarchies, but also presents a valuable opportunity for learning, for all of us to learn about the Dalit community. So thank you. I'm so honored to have you with me today.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here. Glad to speak to you. Yeah.
I usually love to start out with questions around education because I'm an educator. And so I'm always curious about your childhood experiences. I'm curious, did your childhood education play any role in sparking your interest in the arts? Were there specific experiences or influences during that time that guided you towards becoming an artist?
Yeah, I grew up in a family that's mostly filled with educators, like professors and teachers and activists. So there was always that side of things. And my grandmother from my dad's side especially really encouraged me to sort of explore art. So, I mean, but I didn't really take it seriously. I always enjoyed it. And then in school, I did study fine art, but I didn't think that, you know, that was what I would end up doing as a profession.
And how early did you get exposed to the arts in school?
I mean, in school, not at all.
Like in grade school, not at all?
Yeah, with family. I mean, I went to this one school called Rishi Valley for the last 2 years of my schooling, which is, and that's quite, it was started by this philosopher, Krishnamurti, and it is quite geared towards the arts in a way. So when I studied there, I did do fine art, but the school I went to before stopped art classes when we were like 8 or 9 or something. This is not important.
And can you tell us where your schooling experiences were? What city? And
yeah, I was in Pune. I'm born in Pune and I lived there for most of my life. And so I went to a really good school in Pune called St. Mary's, but it was very focused on just getting high grades. And then I went to Rishi Valley, which is in the south of India, which is a boarding school started by Krishnamurti. So that one, that was also quite like, I mean, focused on good grades as well, but in a more holistic way. And you were allowed to sort of explore and do lots of things in your time.
So when you say good grades, you mean in particular subjects that were focused on and not so much the arts?
In the latter school, it was sort of like whatever you do it well. Mm. So that was quite good. I think that was quite a nice. In the earlier school, it was people were quite sort of, okay, you don't seem to be so good at this, so just like give it up completely. And or just like, we don't have time for sports or art. Yeah, but in Rishi Valley, it was sort of, people were encouraged to study different things, but it was just, I think just at the back of it, it was also like, you know, if you're going to do it well.
When did art become, feel like it was possible for you studying art? Because I know you went to go on and study visual anthropology. So that's where I'm coming from right now. I'm sort of curious about like your transition from childhood into young adulthood and then your choice in your major in college. Can you talk about that and what led you towards that?
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't even after Rishi Valley, to be honest, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And so I went back to Pune and I went to Ferguson College there. And we had a good sociology teacher. So that's why I did it. because she was a very good teacher. And I was interested anyway in sociology, but I hadn't really considered it until I had her as a teacher. And then I felt like I wanted to study anthropology. My grandfather was also an anthropologist. So there was also a little bit of like interest from that angle. He never encouraged me to sort of study it, but at least it wasn't his sort of intention. But I was quite interested. And at the same time, I knew I was keen on doing something with photography or film or sound. So visual anthropology felt like a good mix of both. Yeah. And then I, again, after that, I didn't know what I was doing. And then I came back to Pune and I started working with a photographer, artist, and she was running a small art organization. And so we started working together. And then through there, I started making art. So it kind of fell into place very slowly. I didn't have any big, like, decision-making things when I was young. Yeah.
Oh, no, that's super fascinating. When you mentioned you started making art, can you talk about how you entered into the art world? Were you supported? I'm particularly interested in different pathways and challenges that women around the world experience as they sort of start to enter into this practice.
I mean, I think I had it pretty easy because the first like residency and the first works that I made, I was part of the organizing team of this group in Pune. And it was also facilitated by COGE, which is a major art space institute in India. And then I was there participating as an artist. So it kind of, it gave me a bit of that confidence as well, because COGE is like a very well-known space doing incredible work, and they did support my practice from the beginning. And then I think because I perhaps was, you know, I didn't think about things much. I just applied to different residencies and I just applied to things. And somehow like one thing led to another, like maybe I got one and then because of one, I got another one. But I think maybe because I didn't really know much about the art world, I just felt like I could do it. Like I didn't feel like daunted by it or anything like that. Also, I was taking it seriously, but not serious enough. I just thought that, okay, if I do this for a few years, if I get these opportunities, great. And then if I don't, it's fine. I'll do something else in my life. Yeah.
That's fascinating. So identity is an important part of your practice. Can you explain what it means to be Dalit and how this identity shapes your perspective in your work?
Yeah. I mean, I do identify as Dalit. Dalit means from the ground or broken people. Originally, maybe referred to as untouchable people at the bottom of the caste system. And so my mom's from that community. My dad's English. And both of them are sort of social workers, educators, activists to do with Dalit rights. So I sort of grew up in that environment and was always like quite aware of my identity and where it stands, like what, you know, it's not like I didn't know and I just discovered. I mean, I kind of always knew because of this background, but in my practice, I was kind of, there's still many like shadows. There's still so much that I don't know about my Dalit history because, you know, there's not enough written about it. There is a lot, but there's still not enough written about it. There's not enough documentation. There's not enough. And also a lot of it is like very painful. So it was also interesting for me in my practice to think about how to approach trying to learn more about my own community without, you know, causing somebody else more distress or something like that.
Yeah, when I was reading how you study visual anthropology, I was really interested. I was starting to perceive sort of that this was like, there's an aspect of research that's going on in your practice. And so, you know, hearing you talk now, I feel that is definitely coming up that, you know, you're talking about absences in the archives. And so in the way, on the one hand, your work is creating archive, but at the same time, it seems to be also sort of an exploration of a research. So I don't know if you want to speak to the nuances of visual anthropology versus like art history.
Yeah, I wouldn't know much about history since I didn't study it. I mean, whatever we grew up with, yeah, that's there. And like, especially popular culture references, I guess that's sort of more present in everybody's upbringing. With visual anthropology, I agree. Like, I feel like it was important to have that rigor of academia in at least starting out my research, but also thinking about questions that are asked now around ethics, around sort of getting permission, about like finding stories, how to use them. But at the same time, with art practice, I feel like I can use those sort of research methodologies and then at some point just stop and kind of use my imagination and, you know, fill in the gaps that perhaps in academia are still empty. Mm-hmm. But as an artist, it also gives me a lot more leeway, a lot more sort of playing ground, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to sort of go like from step one to step two to step three. It's fine. So that's been exciting. Like, I think the visual anthropology is definitely grounding, but then the art practice kind of keeps trying to break that as well.
That's a really fascinating dynamic. I'm curious about the significance of everyday objects that you use in your installations and how do they reflect the lived experiences of Dalit communities?
Yeah, I started my practice making an installation with hundreds of shoes that was sort of hanging above on the ceiling. So people had to walk under them. And for me, this was a depiction of the caste system. And it's an important work for me, but I don't know if I would do it again because it was also quite, I think it was understanding the sort of power that just everyday objects have is really strong. And especially these were shoes, you know, they signify so much more than just footwear, especially in India. And I was making it in India. And, you know, as much as people enjoyed the work, some people were also very like offended by it. And so it led me to think also about like, okay, if I want to have conversations around caste, how do I approach my work that way? And I'm not interested. I still think it's an important work, but unfortunately, I think it kind of shocked more people than sort of created space for dialogue. But yeah, that was sort of very interesting. And then I've used a lot of sort of clothing, secondhand clothing. And more recently, even though I do a lot more sort of ceramics now and paperworks, I use a lot of bowls at the moment, just regular everyday bowls with like changing them with simple gestures, just because it's true. Like everyday objects have this like immediate reference point. And, you know, if I can do that and get like halfway there, then why not, rather than like making my own bowl or making my own shoe? Like, it's not, I think I'm just more interested in like how to facilitate a conversation more than like just what the work sort of looks.
I appreciate this sort of inquiry-based approach to your work that you're expressing. And also, it's very interesting to think of a work as a conversation. And so this idea that your work is, you know, is sort of an exploration, a sort of practice of research, a practice of creating archive, but also a conversation. And so thinking about the reaction that you mentioned, some people were appalled, you said, and I'm curious, who were those people? Were they the Dalit community? Also thinking about how accessibility in terms of for the Dalit community to experience your work, how do you ensure that your art is accessible to the Dalit community and what has been their response?
Yeah, I mean, the people who were appalled were mostly upper caste people. Yeah, I think that was where it was like, and I was also like not interested in like having an argument with people. And with the Dalit community, I mean, it's not like the Dalit community is necessarily very like separate. Of course, like art spaces in India are mostly private, even if they are open to the public. It's daunting for somebody from another income background to sort of even enter at times. And I guess in the beginning, I did have these questions about like how to make my art more accessible in a way. But I think more and more, I think I just need to focus on the work itself. Like, because I know I'm not necessarily making work for Dalit people. I know I'm not necessarily making work for upper caste people. Like it's sort of, I feel like I'm doing a lot of the research, obviously for myself. And I think because things are changing so much, whether it's in India and the rest of the world, and also I never know who's going to come and see my work. If I keep the audience too much in mind, I think it'll affect the work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having said that, like when I did have this solo show in Delhi a few years ago, there were many Dalit people, like many Dalit artists who came and saw it. And it wasn't something that I factored in, but it happened. And it was a really beautiful sort of moment of dialogue. And I don't know, the encouragement and exchange. So I think I've tried to sort of give that, like push that away, because I guess the art world is filled with these sort of dichotomies.
Yeah. And I mean, it's interesting because you're very international as well. Like I encountered your work in Washington, D.C. So, you know, there's this aspect, like I mentioned in the beginning, like, you're creating this opportunity for us to learn, for me to learn, for anyone who encounters internationally your work to learn. And you're bringing a very local knowledge to an international community. And so I think that that's super, super important aspect of the sociocultural contribution that you're making. So in your photo exhibition, Eat with Great Delight, you explore the connotation of food consumption within Dalit communities. What focused you to focus on food, and how did you see that contributing, that project contributing to the broader conversation?
I started my work on food in 2016. And then basically India had a beef ban, like many states had enforced a beef ban. And as a result of that, there were many lynchings of Muslim people and Dalit people on this, like, and they were being like publicly attacked on the suspicion of eating beef or consuming, like transporting beef. And it was quite a horrific time. At the same time, there were also protests against these actions. But that just led me to sort of question my own food habits, because I did identify as Dalit, but I don't, my family doesn't eat beef. And, but it was sort of, okay, what is it about our food that's so threatening? That's so, you know, and why are people being attacked when they're not even eating these things, just on the suspicion? So that sort of led me to look for more sort of understandings of Dalit food. And I came across just one Dalit cookbook written by a journalist in Marathi called Annaheya Purna Brahma, and another study that was done by the University of Pune by the Gender Studies Department And it was called Isn't This Plate Indian? And it was great. It sort of, you know, put things into perspective for me a lot. And they did also mention how Dalit literature carries a lot of, you know, extracts about food. And at that same time, I was starting to read more Dalit autobiographies. And it kind of, it just clicked. Like, I just felt like, wow, they're filled with writing about food. So I make sort of cookbooks, like not real recipes, but not something that one can like follow easily, but just sort of adapting text from Dalit autobiographies and just making it seem like instructions. But they may be recipes of leftovers. They may be recipes of feasts. They may be recipes of just hunger, but sort of not questioning, you know, what the writer's writing about, just taking it all in. And then the photographs sort of came about just as I was reading these, but also I was looking at my own family archives, and I was wondering, like, how do I ask my family about their recipes and things like that? But I don't know, I just felt like that was too cheesy. Like, I didn't necessarily want to make it into an art practice. Like, I could do it for myself, but I didn't. And but then I came across all these photographs, just regular photographs of us eating. And I felt like maybe that's enough. Like, that image, these images of, you know, my own family, a Dalit family, eating and enjoying themselves is as much, you know, like a Dalit archive of food as, you know, a legitimate cookbook. So it was also just trying to question and bring it to light sort of access to literacy, access to a camera, and then what happens when this documentation happens through these mediums.
I love it. I'm always telling people artists are deeply thoughtful. They are researchers. And I think that's something that, you know, a lot of people don't understand, the research, everything you're saying, you have a lot of questions. You're constantly asking questions. And one of the things I love about your practice is you're a multidisciplinary artist who is exploring, really. That's what I'm hearing, is you're constantly exploring, constantly asking questions and sort of experimenting. And so with these different mediums that you're using in the different projects, how do you decide in any given moment what question to pursue or what medium to pursue?
Difficult. I mean, I try and sort of do things as like straightforward as possible. Like, I don't really sort of, I think the ceramic sort of came in at a time when I was also in Amsterdam and I didn't have access to like real, like a particular kind of flour used to make a certain kind of bread, which I wanted to write about. And then there was a ceramics workshop there. And I thought, oh, let me try it over here. Like, try and make sort of ceramic bread. And then it just kind of worked, because it, like, ceramics also has that, like, you're kind of using similar techniques to like cooking and like the kitchen. And there's also water and fire involved. But at the end of it, I liked how the results are like inedible rather than edible. And yeah, the rest of them as well, sort of even the cookbooks are just like simple booklets that people can just, you know, pick up, read through, or like maybe there's some for free, video, sound. It's like, it's, I think maybe, yeah, that's maybe the plus point of not going to art school, because I didn't really specialize in one thing. So it's sort of just seeing how a particular medium could work for this. Like, I've realized I don't necessarily have to be an expert at these things, but just test it out and see what happens. Yeah.
Oh, I love interdisciplinarity. So I'm all for it. So, speaking of yourself as an artist, have you navigated self-doubt in your journey as an artist and as an advocate? And how have you dealt with that? Do you have any experience with overcoming this internal struggle that sometimes artists or creative people may experience?
Oh my God. Every day is an issue. Yeah. I don't know. I think you just have to get on with it. I mean, it's like, I think also because I'm still not like disciplined enough to kind of have a very like everyday studio practice or even like a research-based practice. Like, I know sometimes I will be doing a lot of research, but then, you know, your ideas sort of come when you're just doing something like shopping for groceries or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of letting that, like, I think that's also there that, you know, you're going to find ideas at some point, but just in unexpected places. But then, yeah, I mean, you know, you like apply for things, you get some, you don't get many more. Mm-hmm. And I think with art, it's always a bit dicey like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't really know when it'll end, like this sort of self-doubt and anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm enjoying myself at the same time. So it's, I guess, yeah, not taking it too seriously, hopefully. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when you talked about unexpected places, you travel quite a bit. So what role has travel played in your practice? How important is that for you?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, I've been very lucky to sort of get opportunities to travel. Like right now, I'm doing a residency here in Paris for 3 months and just researching French porcelain because I'm interested in that medium. So it's been really good to, as much as my work is specifically about Dalit culture, I think it's important to broaden, sort of just get ideas from different perspectives, different contexts, and then see how to, like, you know, if it fits together, great. If not, then reading interesting books, something will happen. No, but the travel for sure. Like, I think it just opens up and also space from like your direct context, like just helps put things into perspective. When I'm in India, obviously it's a very different, it's a totally different context and I'm in it. And then I feel like my brain starts working quite differently, which I also like. And that's why I'm still there. But then maybe, you know, a few weeks or a little bit of time outside also gives you that space to digest all of those experiences. Yeah, I've been quite fortunate to kind of move around.
Yeah, there's been the same for me. I mean, I love to travel. I love India, by the way. That's why I keep going back.
Great.
Some places, I've been in like over 60 countries, and people always ask me like, what's my favorites? And I'm like, okay, I don't do favorites, but there are places that I go and I feel content, like I've been there. And then that I'm like, you know what? I'll be back. And every time I leave India, I'm like, I'll be back. And I still haven't been to the South. I really want to go to Goa. I have plans, so I'll be back.
Yeah, definitely.
So you mentioned that sometimes the practice can be painful, the research, the discoveries that you're experiencing. And I wondered if you could speak about self-care when you're dealing with such heavy and personal issues through your art that can be emotionally taxing. How do you practice self-care to maintain your well-being?
I mean, I think the self-care also comes through in the practice. Like, I know when I, like, say if I'm working on the recipes or particular books, like those are always more painful than other parts of my practice. And I think actually my other mediums developed as an alternative to that. Like, it was getting a bit too painful to process this just through like reading and taking it all in that way and writing. And then sort of the ceramics were allowing me to like enjoy it in a way, like just process it like through my body and not necessarily another way. So I kind of also see the practice as like, okay, you know what, this is getting like, where's that line in the practice also of like, okay, this is hard work and this is painful, but then is it now getting a bit tedious or is it too much? Like, when is too much? Like, what am I giving to my practice? So then I kind of switch, or at least I try to. Yeah.
That's
and
deep.
It's more like I'm always making art, but it's, yeah, I think the point of it is also to keep yourself energized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's very deep what you just said. The idea of like the practice, a sort of way of negotiating these complex issues, the practice, I see implications for that for educators, for students, for any type of learner in different settings, when learning about complicated histories, complicated events, and then maybe change forms. You're talking about
you
pivot to a different medium, perhaps even. You know, you're sitting down with a book, it's getting tough. You need to pivot and make. And now you're making and you're using one medium. And so you're pivoting and trying another medium and finding, and so it's like constantly seeking some joy in there and also bringing the experience into your body, moving it out of just your head and your heart. That's very deep. I love it. Okay. My last question that I like to ask guests on Beyond Beauty Podcast is, what are your advice for other emerging women artists, especially those with complex intersectional identities such as yours, who are navigating their creative journeys and also maybe addressing social justice issues?
Yeah, advice is a tough. I think more to be maybe perhaps a bit more selfish with ourselves, you know, just sort of also more honest and kind of, because identity is such a tricky word also nowadays, and it's being sort of used and abused by the art world, by all kinds of different institutions. And then as a person, if you are sort of making work around these issues, and then how do you kind of, maybe other people will try and like pigeonhole you and things, but I think just to kind of be quite like open and honest with your practice and kind of let the, like, enjoy the complexities as well. Mm. Like, you know, if there's privilege, enjoy the privilege. Like how to kind of, because I think through the complexity comes sort of interesting ways to create solidarity rather than kind of similarities or like, you know, and all of our identities are so sort of diverse. And, you know, at some level, of course, we can all relate to one another, even as women artists. But at the same time, there's so much we can't. And I feel like perhaps that's what makes it more interesting to have solidarity with the differences.
Mm, I love that. Seeking solidarity, not similarity. Okay. Okay. I'm snapping my fingers for the people who can't see. I love it. Thank you so much, Rajashree. This has been really inspiring and really resonate on some of the things you've said today that have implications for different, not only creatives, but for teachers and learners, you know, in terms of inter and multidisciplinarity and self-care and even the advice you've given at the end. Because, you know, as women internationally, yes, we have so many different experienced so many complicated histories, complicated, complex identities. And I love this idea of focusing on solidarity, not similarity. Yes. So that allows us each to be, to have our own identities and our own histories and acknowledge those. So yes, thank you so much for being with us today. And I'm so excited to follow your journey. Is there anything that you're excited about and we should know about that's coming up next?
Yeah, I'm part of Busan Biennale next month. So preparing for a performance then. So just working on that at the moment. But that's what's coming up next. And I have to finish my time in Paris. And then let's see. Go back to India and keep working.
You're going back and forth between two of my favorite places, Paris and India. So enjoy. And
thank you so much. This was great to speak to you. Yeah.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Beyond Beauty. Rajashree Goody has given us a deep and personal look into her artistic journey and the impact of her work on addressing caste-based discrimination and social justice. Her insights remind us of the power of art to create dialogue and to negotiate our own lived experiences. Don't forget to follow us on your favorite streaming platform to catch every episode of Beyond Beauty. Until next time, I encourage you to continue to uncover the rich layers of creativity and culture that exist beyond beauty.